Hey, you're listening to Nucleotapes on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3. I'm your host, Claude Glass. On this show, we are looking at the musical legacy of Alice Coltrane, and we just heard a set of sort of loosely defined spiritual jazz contemporaries in that late 60s, early 70s period, where Alice Coltrane was contributing some wonderful records as a band leader on Impulse. I feel like you missed anything. The set list is always posted on reptiliansnackrecords.com/nucleotapes and the Reptilian Snack Records Instagram page. You can also find an archive of past episodes over there. If you have any ideas for future episodes, questions, comments, concerns, my email is reptiliansnackrecords@gmail.com. Even if you just want to say hey, or give me an album recommendation, local music recommendation, whatever, that's where you can find me. If you're looking for another show to tune into on WRCT, consider tuning into From Ipanema to the World. Brazilian music is arguably the number one export product from Brazil. From Ipanema to the World presents Brazilian music and information to the listeners of WRCT every Friday at 7. Tune in and enjoy listening to an adventurous mix of familiar standards and lesser-known gems from the Brazilian songbook and a broad range of musical styles. Another show you can consider tuning into is called Consolidation. Listen to better music. Consolidation is on Wednesday evenings from 7 to 10. What constitutes better music? I don't know. I guess I'll tune into the show to find out. Better. That's a term with quite a bit of slippage, I would say. What's our starting point? This is hard to evaluate. Anyway, moving right along, we're going to use the second half of this show to look at some modern artists that are inspired in some way by the music of Alice Coltrane and her unique fusion of keyboard, incredibly textural, dense, harp playing, wonderful arrangements, with a deeply genuine, resonant, spiritual element. Over the course of her early career, that 70s period, immediately following the death of her husband, John Coltrane, as time went on, she became increasingly less interested with the life in kind of the public eye, and with that entire lifestyle of being a kind of famous musician, and found herself increasingly more interested in passing along some sort of spiritual guidance, and getting into the 80s, really intentionally kind of backed away from that musical spotlight, and preferred to focus on being a spiritual teacher. And eventually, in the 80s and 90s, her musical output was mostly more new age vocal music.
Are you listening in at your house? Are you listening in at your car? If you want to hear good music, you don't have to go far. 88.3 is the magic number. WRCT in at the Pittsburgh area. Who say so? I say so. Who is me? Maccabi Selassie.
All right, welcome everybody. Let's jump right in. We haven't done a good old-fashioned press briefing wacky questions segment in a little bit. I checked in on the press briefing that took place on Wednesday this week, and some really pretty wacky stuff is going on. First of all, Fox News' Peter Doocy is still trying to ask these gotchas of Jen Psaki. She's actually increasingly well-prepared to handle them, and here is one where, after some comments Joe Biden made, Peter Doocy is asking whether if a parent doesn't like their kid's curriculum, they should be considered a domestic terrorist. Extremely misleading. I'll explain in a moment.
Does the administration agree that parents upset about their kids' curriculums could be considered domestic terrorists?
Well, let me unravel this a little bit, because the National School Board Association is not a part of the U.S. government. I'd point you to them. What the Department of Justice said in a letter from the Attorney General is that, quote, threats against public servants are not only illegal, they run counter to our nation's core values. That is true. These were threats against public servants, threats against members of the school board. Regardless of the reasoning, threats and violence against public servants is illegal.
Now, you might be wondering, what on earth is Peter Doocy talking about? And what he's talking about is the mobilization of the federal government to some degree on the basis of escalated threats against educators and the insanity that's happening at the school board meetings. The problem is not taking seriously the behavior of parents at school board meetings. That's what we should be doing. The problem is that the school board meetings are getting completely insane. And what this entire thing is in reference to is that last week, the National School Boards Association pressed Biden for federal assistance to review whether violence and threats against public school officials could be considered a form of domestic terrorism and hate crimes. That's all that this is about. And Peter Doocy, of course, has to make it the most melodramatic thing possible. Then Peter Doocy tries to make it a free speech issue. The problem is lunatic parents at the school board meetings. Then Doocy tries to make it a free speech issue. Does Biden support the right to protest? Of course he does.
So does the president support the fundamental right of these parents to protest at school board meetings?
Of course, but he doesn't stand for the fundamental right. I assume you don't either, for people to take a violent action against members of public servants. And that's what the threats are about. And no. So, no, he doesn't stand for that. No.
Right. It's one of these after another, just continuing to make something not out of nothing, but make something out of what you should be making the opposite out of. Why are all of these parents losing their minds, going crazy at school board meetings, attacking teachers, verbally assaulting, quoting Hitler, as we talked about last week, on and on and on? That's really the question. And then just one other, here's a bonus one. This is a different reporter saying, why hasn't Joe Biden called Mitch McConnell to try to get all of this stuff sorted out, referring to the bills? And the double standard here is notable. Let's listen first.
Why wouldn't the president, given that relationship he has with Mitch McConnell, just call Mitch McConnell and have this conversation with him? Why do this through public
events? What's the conversation about?
I don't know. They have the relationship. He's the one who said he could bring the two sides together. So wouldn't there be some value in having that conversation?
We know what the risk-free option is here. We know what the clear path forward is here. And I think the president has made no secret about his belief on that.
So I have no problem with Joe. I've said it a million times. When Joe Biden brought Republicans to the White House, and some people on the left were mad, some people on the right were mad. Great. Bring them. Give them an opportunity to weigh in on the COVID stimulus bill. That was back then. They don't want to participate. Let them not participate. And ultimately, that's what they did. But you're not going to hold things up. It's fine to talk to them. When it was Trump, right? The question was, why won't Democrats give Trump what he wants? Why are Democrats getting in the way? Why won't they concede anything at all? Why? Even though that was a completely dishonest framing. Now, much of the corporate media has switched to, why isn't Joe Biden talking to more Republicans? Before, the problem was Democrats weren't giving Trump what he wanted. Now the problem is Joe Biden hasn't called Mitch McConnell. But a couple months ago, when he actually did meet with Republicans, then the problem was, why is he giving Republicans so much power, even though he didn't? It's the need to constantly create the most salacious possible narrative, even if it has very little bearing on reality. So that's the press briefing. Let's now talk about Christmas. When a Democratic president is in power, very often Fox News talks about the war on Christmas a lot. And we now have a pandemic which has affected holidays for some time. And Fox News is going absolutely crazy over very milquetoast comments that Anthony Fauci made. I'm going to play the clip for you that started it all. Dr. Fauci was asked over the weekend, are Christmas gatherings good to go? And he, responding to a question, said, it's just too early to say.
But we can gather for Christmas, or it's just too soon to tell?
You know, Margaret, it's just too soon to tell. We've just got to concentrating on continuing to get those numbers down and not try to jump ahead by weeks or months and say what we're going to do at a particular time.
Fauci didn't cancel Christmas. He didn't even come out and say, I must talk about Christmas. He was asked a question and he said, it's just kind of early. Fox News has now been going for 48 hours with the idea that Fauci is canceling Christmas. Look at these clips. Here is Jason Rantz, who is a radio host in Seattle. Listen to this unhinged insanity.
75% or so. To tell me that it's not safe to visit your family for Christmas, to say that now in October, indicates this isn't really about public health at this point. Now we're talking about taking total control.
Now, understand what he did there. This guy's saying, in October, Fauci's saying no Christmas. No. In October, Fauci's saying Christmas is too far away to talk about Christmas. We just need to see what's happening with the virus. Another example here is, I think this is Kennedy saying, why is Fauci talking about Christmas? Well, he was asked about it. He didn't come up with the question.
The problem is he's talking about Christmas and Hanukkah. We haven't gotten to Halloween and Thanksgiving.
Columbus Day.
Kids, thank you, Dana.
We're getting rid of that.
Kids did not get to have a Halloween last year.
Right.
And it's like, you know, you have little kids. You only have so many of them. My daughter last year had to bake a Twilight cake with little gravestones.
Okay, yeah. Making drama where there is no drama. Why is Fauci talking about Christmas? Because he was asked by Margaret Brennan about Christmas. That's why. Then the histrionics really get going with Tucker Carlson. Tucker, it's incredible what Tucker is able to do with this. The histrionic nature of this. Take a look.
There was, do not travel for Christmas, Anthony Fauci said. Do not congregate together to celebrate it. That means no Christmas Eve in church. That means no Christmas morning under the tree with your
family. It's an attack on religion.
Like tearing through stockings. It means no Christmas
stockings.
At all. Stockings. Sacred Christian observance canceled until further notice from Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, MD. What a thrill it must have been for him to say something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a guy who fully expected to spend his life giving prostate exams, and there he was declaring the ancient Christian calendar null and void.
By the way, was Fauci heading towards urology as a spec? I don't even know what the prostate exam thing even is. So Tucker blowing it completely out of the water. Here's another right-wing guy, Clay Travis, saying Fauci's just trying to control holidays.
New one. But I have to say that Fauci there, the Constitution matters the most in times of emergency and crisis, because that's when the foundation of our country's documents matter the absolute most.
Imagine, Dr. Fauci, what do you think about Christmas? I don't know. It's too soon to tell. This guy is attacking the Constitution.
And the idea that he's trying to argue to us that we can't celebrate Christmas together. And now he's saying, oh, I didn't say that, but you did say it.
He didn't say it. He didn't say it. He said it's just too soon to tell. And then lastly, here is one more of these, and it's just more pathetic than the last.
Yes, after calling for the cancellation of Christmas again, somehow Anthony Fauci still has his job.
Never happened. Just never happened. And this is how the narratives start and continue. This one has the same texture as the Dr. Seuss, who, by the way, is not a medical doctor, folks. You should know about that. These people are pathetic, but they don't have anything else. So this is what they're doing. Remember that on Tuesday, October 19th, we will be doing a live viewer town hall. It will be streaming live exclusively only on the Pacman Live YouTube channel, which you can find at youtube.com/Pacman Live. It won't be streaming on Facebook. It won't be streaming on TikToks. It won't be on the main YouTube channel. It won't be on Twitch. The Pacman Live channel, 6 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, October 19th. Everybody can call in. Members on our website get priority. Will be a great event, and I hope to see all of you then. Let's take a quick break, and we have quite a program planned for you today. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Remember that we are primarily funded by viewers and listeners who sign up on my website. You can find the membership sign up form, very extensive form. You put in like your email and you make a password. At joinpacman.com, the normal membership rates I find to be really a great deal. But what the hell do I know? If you don't like the prices, though, you can use the code BETTER21 and get a discount. Not means tested. Open to everybody. You decide. You decide. Let's hear from some people in the audience. One of the best parts of the week for many. A terrible part of the week for some others. Okay, right. Let's just get into it. It's via Discord. You can participate at davidpacman.com/Discord. Let's start today with Caitlin from Alaska. Caitlin from Alaska, you are on the air.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you beautifully, okay. Caitlin, yeah.
Perfect. It's been a minute. Glad to hear you're doing good.
Thank you. I actually
don't have a question. I just wanted to give you a quick update here from Alaska.
Please.
Since we made news with our fantastically wonderful, mask mandate discussion.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin, right as you were about to get into the substance, you glitched out. Tell us again what's happening now in Alaska.
I personally don't know anyone who's passed away from COVID. My work is very strict with our guidelines.
Okay.
So no one is allowed into our office without being vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And even with that, we've had one person catch COVID. We've had two others who have been in contact with somebody and had to quarantine. My sister is a hairdresser and she sees, like 100 people a week.
Mm-hmm.
And she has been lucky enough to not catch COVID.
Right.
So it seems to me that even though Alaska is doing absolutely atrocious, with everyone I know, we always wear our masks outside of the house.
Okay.
And so it seems like for those of us here in Anchorage, as long as you still continue with the mitigation efforts along with being fully vaccinated, most people are safe. So the numbers are terrifying, and I really, really wish we didn't have such a ignorant mayor. But I mean, as long as people are intelligent and use their brain, we seem to be doing okay.
All right. Very good, Caitlin. Thank you. How many hours of daylight do you have right now up there?
The sun's rising right now. It's 8:12. I would say it usually sets around 6 or 7 right now.
Okay, so it's starting to become a little more normal, I guess.
Normal for other people, yes.
Yeah, very good. All right, Caitlin, thank you. Always great hearing from Alaska. Okay, thank you. Caitlin apparently disappearing there. Very good. Well, we got our Alaska update, which is a great start. Why don't we go next to John from Kentucky and see what's going on there? John, what's happening?
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
Yes. Are you calling from an airplane?
I'm calling from a car. Give me 1 second.
Okay. No, it's not bad. It's nice. It's nice ambient noise.
Okay. Well, perfect.
Yeah.
I was calling because I had a question on de-radicalizing leftists, to be honest.
Okay.
I personally identify principally as a socialist, but I've recognized in my time growing up with this particular ideology that reality does tend to skew liberal, both from the left wing and also the right wing. Like, for example, it's frustrating when I talk to my socialist friends who want to pretend like there's going to be a violent revolution of the proletariat.
Yeah.
And I just have to look at them like, are you guys living in the same reality as me? Or similarly with the anti-vax stuff, people taking the big pharma to incredibly insane conclusions. I was just wondering if there was any way to kind of engage with these sort of things from a center perspective without coming off as like a shill for liberalism or neoliberalism.
Sure. Now, just to be clear, you're saying you are a socialist, but you want to talk to these folks more from a centrist perspective. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, principally, I recognize that, yeah, I do think it's a little bit messed up that we have more empty houses than we have homeless people in America, for example,
mm-hmm.
and that it's kind of terrible that that's locked behind a privatized system. That being said, in our current system, it's probably a good thing that landlords can evict people who aren't taking care of their investment.
I see. I mean, listen, with the in terms of the people who are expecting or waiting or hoping for a violent uprising to by the proletariat, I think it makes sense to sort of talk through exactly how that would happen. And importantly, the number of people that might be killed or maimed in such a revolution, and see if they feel like the ends would justify the means. Some might say yes, some might say no. But I think it's good to just have them walk you through all of the steps, if that makes sense. Now, I've got to ask, are you driving a V8 with knobby tires?
I'm actually just driving a good old-fashioned 2014 Ford Fusion. I have no clue what kind of tires are on here.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, listen, John, good luck with the de-radicalization and report back if you are able to effectively do any of it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time.
All right. Pleasure. John from Kentucky. Very strong first couple of calls. Not great audio there on that second one, but we're going to deal with it. Let's go next to Alex from Baltimore, Maryland. Alex, you're on the air.
Hey, David, can you hear me?
I can.
Hey, great. So I have a question about moderates in general. So I feel like a popular take from the left is that anyone who has a moderate, even if it's a liberal viewpoint, is therefore corrupt and therefore a shill.
Hmm.
Do you believe that to be true? And how do you tell the difference between the two?
No. So you know that thing about, like, you know porn when you see it. I think people know grifter and enlightened centrist positions when they see them versus someone who's just moderate. I think there's a difference between staking out positions of neutrality to be perceived as some kind of, you know, above the fray centrist, and it's often very disingenuous and very transparent, versus there are issues on which people can just genuinely be moderate, and it doesn't mean they've sold out to anyone. There could be, you know, think about taxation. There are people who might think that the top tax rate should be 90%, and some who think there should be no taxes or a 5% flat tax, and you're going to come across someone who just thinks, hey, like, I don't know, it should be 42%, a little bit higher than we have now, but that's it. Just because they're at 42 and someone else is at 37 and someone else is at 20, there's no particular reason to say if you end up in the middle, it's because of a corrupting influence. There's no substantive basis to believe that. That's different than people who just sort of frame themselves as neutral and centrist on everything to pretend to be above bias. You understand the distinction I'm making?
Yeah, I do. Again, and that's kind of how I feel. It's just actually my comment was more about the commentary of how other progressive people assume that because you're a moderate,
yep,
you are therefore you are corrupt.
No, I think that that's wrong. Yeah,
you believe?
No, I don't believe it either. And I guess that's my point. There's no substantive reason to assume that because someone is moderate on an issue, their view is corrupted by whatever. No, I disagree with people who think that, whether they're on the left or right.
Fair enough. And I have a quick travel question for
sure,
you, because
sure.
You again, I called a little bit a while ago about travel stuff. I have young kids. Where would you recommend a foreign country that is more kid friendly?
Oh my goodness, I have no idea. What does it mean, kid friendly? I mean, there's millions of children in countries all over the world.
That is true. I guess my thinking on that would be is, you know, things that we as adults that to explore other countries would be fun, would not be fun for a 6-year-old.
Right.
So I guess other places where they would have things for kids as well, and not just, you know, old cultural stuff that you and I would find interesting, but
yeah,
that a 6 or 8 year old would.
I have no idea what a 6 or 8 year old finds interesting, to be perfectly frank. I'm so poorly positioned to answer the question.
No, that's fair. It was just more of a fun question to ask you. And I have one last quickie food debate.
Sure.
It is autumn, fall, whatever you prefer to call it.
Sure.
Pumpkin spice or apple cider flavor?
Oh my God, I don't do either, but I will have an occasional cider donut. So I guess I'd go cider flavor rather than pumpkin spice.
That's a fair point. I thoroughly enjoy both, but I figured that was, you know, you're from the Northeast. I figured that'd be a big question for you.
Yeah. No, the pumpkin spice stuff. I'm seeing everybody with their pumpkin spice lattes that are half whipped cream with, it should be illegal. That's my view.
I don't know. I turn into a very basic white girl this time of year. So
all right, my friend,
on that one, but
thank you very much for the call. Likewise. Yeah. Thanks very much. Yeah. No, by the way, I don't think pumpkin spice should be illegal. I just, you know, it's not for me, I guess, is the point that I'm trying to make. Let's go next to Shayna from State College. Is that State College, Pennsylvania?
Shane. It is, yes.
Okay, yeah. I don't know how is the town called State College? I never understood it.
Yeah, it's the I guess the main campus for Penn State University, and the town is called State College.
Fascinating. All right. Well, what's going on?
Not much. Pleasure to speak with you. Really enjoy the show. I have a quick question. Would you ever consider doing a long form discussion with Jordan Peterson? I know you and he have a lot of disagreements. I think it'd be fascinating to hear you two go back and forth for a couple hours.
Sure. He's been on before and he's welcome back anytime.
Okay. I think a lot of people would benefit from seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, he may be too big for the David Pakman show now. I don't know that he would do it, quite frankly.
Oh, is that right?
I don't know. I don't think there's a guarantee that Peterson needs or wants to appear on my show right now.
And I guess the other question with that is, what are your current thoughts on the IDW? And what do you say about, because I've read different forums and things, and some people have placed you in that crowd. What do you think of them and what's going on?
Oh, yeah, I don't know anything about that. But I honestly haven't thought about or seen anything about the intellectual dark web for, I would say, a year or longer. I don't know if it still, quote, exists. I just have no idea whatsoever. I mean, have they disbanded? Was it ever really banded? I just have no idea. It seems, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems as though the relevance and number of mentions have declined dramatically.
That's what I've noticed as well. And I didn't even think it was a formal group. I thought it was just sort of like a loose collection of similar kind of thinkers and whatnot. Now I know, and I haven't heard you talk about this guy very much, but I don't know if you've been following Brett Weinstein and the Dark Horse podcast and some of the things that they've been saying over there.
Yeah, no, I have. I'm aware of the, you know, spike protein is cytotoxic phase and the ivermectin is fantastic phase and all of these different. I am aware of what's going on, but I've taken mostly a Sam Harris approach where it's very hard to really like go point counterpoint because they kind of put out a fire hose of stuff. And if they mention one thing you're not prepared for or can immediately refute, it comes off as though they're really making good points. And so, you know, for similar reasons as Sam Harris has stated, I'm not like super directly engaging with it.
That kind of corresponds with my take on it as well, because I did actually follow the podcast he and his wife did for a while. But then as time wore on, I just found that I wasn't resonating with what they were saying quite as much. And I had to do a lot more kind of digging to really kind of see if what they were saying squared with, you know, what the vast majority of other experts were saying. And eventually I just decided that they weren't for me.
Yeah, that's fair. That's completely fair. Everybody should make informed decisions about media consumption. I'm glad you did.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's it for me, but real love the show. Support what you're doing. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for the call. We're going to take just a very brief break, but we're going to continue the calls. So if you're holding on to talk to me, unless you're furious at how long you've been holding and are about to hang up in a rage, just hold on another moment and we're going to go right back to the Discord lines in a second. All right, let's hear from a few more people today. We are now taking calls via Discord. It typically works really, really well. You can find the Discord at davidpakman.com/discord. Let's go across the pond. I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. Is it Shanice in the United Kingdom?
Hi, yes, it's Shanice. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Are you calling in from Nottingham?
I am, yes. Yeah,
what a
from
pleasure.
Nottingham in the UK.
What a pleasure.
Thanks. I'm a huge fan of the show.
Thank you.
My question was, I was just wondering, why do you think that the left kind of branding and messaging is generally so much less successful than the right. I feel as though whenever, you know, the left come up with something like defund the police or something like that, it just kind of tends to cause like a lot of infighting. It doesn't really tend to kind of like go as well. Whereas when the right come up with something, it always tends to kind of work a little bit better. Do you think it's just kind of, I feel as if it's almost like the bully in the playground, like the right's voice is just louder. They kind of just go along with points without really any kind of evidence, but it tends to work better for them than it does kind of for us on the left.
Beautiful question. So I think that there's two answers depending on the circumstances. So sometimes the left just comes up, just brands a bad idea. Okay. So like defund the police wasn't a good idea. It was a bad idea. And as I explained in my 10-point police reform plan, reallocation of resources, yes, reform, replacing police with social workers for some types of calls, yes, but in some places you might need to increase funding for police in order to accomplish those things or to be at the proper level of staffing in order to have police be more proactive than reactive. Okay, so like defund the police was a bad idea as a slogan because the idea itself is not a good idea. That's one side.
Right, okay.
But there's a whole other set of examples, which are sometimes the left assumes that because we have the right idea, that the branding doesn't matter and we just have to explain the idea and everybody will like it. And the right, who has the wrong idea, is like, that doesn't really matter. We just need a slogan. And they come up with a slogan and it works. I mean, pro-life is a great example, and so is tax relief. Pro-life. Well, actually, what you're doing is you're picking and choosing certain medical situations that should be left to patients and doctors and assigning a name to it where if you're against it, it's like, wow, that you're anti-life. If you're not pro-life, you're anti-life by definition. That's really good branding, even though the policy makes no sense. Tax relief. Anytime taxes go down, it's the relief of a burden. So even though the real situation with taxes is you need well-balanced taxes and well-allocated in order to pay for the things that we all expect would be paid for through taxation, tax relief. Listen, we're relieving people of this burden. So sometimes the left is completely correct on the position and they assume that the facts alone will win people over. And the right's like, no, we can just come up with a better slogan. So two different categories there, Shanice.
That makes perfect sense. I really agree with what you're saying. I also think I liked what you were saying the other day as well about these kind of politicians who seem to kind of be doing everything with the coronavirus like wrong and incorrectly. They could kind of be called like pro-vaccine. I think things like that is like a really good idea too.
Pro-virus, you mean? Pro-virus.
Yeah, pro-virus. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, let's call them what they are. They seem to be on the side of the virus. And especially when, okay, they might refuse the vaccine, but you're also going to refuse getting tested. Like, what's the reason? That doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, these are all relevant examples.
Okay. Thank you so much for answering my questions.
My pleasure. I appreciate the call. All right. Shanice from Nottingham, UK. Great, great call. Why don't we go next to, you know, we tried last time and it didn't work. Let's go to Eric from Cancun, Mexico. Eric, are you with us this time?
David, hello?
Yes.
A great pleasure to talk to you. I've been trying for months and weeks. Here's the thing I'm thinking. My family wants to get a passport to US and I'd like to visit the States, but I've been seeing your videos and from parent cousins and the Young Turks. And I've seen very deranged individuals, both civilians and in the police and army. I think it's be safe for tourists and foreigners to go there with all the wackos and psychopaths around?
I mean, listen, everybody needs to do their own risk assessment. But statistically speaking, the U.S. is not an unsafe place to be. You know, there are safer and less safe places in the U.S., the big country. In the big cities, you have to take the normal precautions that you take in any big city. But you need to make that assessment. I mean, the U.S. is not an unsafe place to go to statistically, but that doesn't mean bad things don't happen. Bad things happen all the time. You really have to make that call.
Yeah, I'm really with the mindset that I, like in the song of Alphaville of Forever Young, hoping for the best, but expect the worst, like what happened in that mall in El Paso. And other thing, I've been a martial artist since 8 years old. Would it be legal for me to defend myself, or would I be charged with assault if I fight back?
I think you would be perfectly within your legal rights to defend yourself, regardless of your martial arts training.
Yeah, I've been in Taekwondo, in Krav Maga, in Capoeira, a bit of Jiu-Jitsu and Karate.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure. And one quick thing. Do you remember when Republicans were mad at Dr. Seuss?
Yes, and you know, he's not even a real doctor. He's not a medical doctor.
I think they would be angry because they made books about Trump's other relatives. For example, his left-leaning uncle, the Lorax. He's more naughty but logical half-sister, the Sour Kangaroo. And he's more handsome and more wholesome, causing the Grinch. What do you think?
Very nice. Very nice, Eric. I love it. How is Cancun? Which part of Cancun do you live in? The downtown or where?
And in the heart of downtown, it's very nice. It's like sauna all year, but in winter, it's climatizing.
Beautiful. And all right. Eric, thank you so much for the call. We love our Mexican viewers.
Thank you.
All
Bye.
Right. There is Eric. Eric from Cancun. What a call, folks. What a call. Maybe my new favorite caller, I have to tell you. Let's go next to, how about Enrique from North Carolina? You're on the air.
Hi, David.
Yes.
It's so exciting talking to you.
Please.
So my question is, do you know anything about DACA? The future's lining up for that?
No.
DACA.
I mean, I've been saying for a very long time that we need a permanent solution when it comes to DACA. We just need it. It has to happen. But I am not aware. I wish I could tell you. I think it's coming soon. I don't really think it's coming soon. I don't. Not this year, anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you? You're a DACA recipient?
Yeah. I was brought here when I was 1 year old.
Sorry, you were born here or brought here at 1 year old? I missed that.
Oh, I was brought here at 1 year old.
That makes sense. Yeah, most people are born at zero, not at one. I figured I misheard.
Oh, yeah.
And how old are you now?
Yeah. I'm 21 now.
Wow. So this is really your country.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know more. I'm more American than I am Mexican.
Right.
You know, I love, you know, Mexican culture.
Sure.
But I grew up in American culture. You know, I speak English. I'm just as American as anyone else here.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah. If someone came to you and said, sir, you've got to go back to Mexico, I can only imagine how devastating that would be.
I would be freaking out. I don't know what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm with you. We need a solution. I hope that we get to it sooner than later. But realistically, it doesn't seem like there's a political appetite to get it done this year at minimum. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, David.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for calling in. Yeah. I mean, you know, millions of people in that situation. Millions. Millions. Is it millions? Maybe it's not. Now I misremember. Is it hundreds of thousands? Many people. Many people. Let's go next to Josie from Michigan. Josie, you're on the air.
What's up, David? How are you doing?
How you doing?
Good. I just wanted to know, what do you think about the 30 U.S. school children still stuck in Afghanistan right now?
I'm not aware of the number of people left. What are the circumstances? Were they on like some kind of summer trip or something?
Believe it or not, they were on a school trip. I don't know who takes their school children to Afghanistan.
That's my question. I mean, it's now I know that sometimes when people say, how on earth would you take kids? People come back and say there's much to learn culturally, historically. I don't deny that. I don't deny that. I just don't understand, given the security situation, who would do that? What age kids are they? Are they high schoolers? Do you know?
I think I heard something along the lines of the principal or one of the students' dad is a U.S. official or something like that. And they were going.
Now, have they, do we know, I don't know anything about the story. Have Joe Biden's administration has said, anyone who wants to get out, we will help get out. There's no time limit on it. Like, is this in the middle of a process or what's going on?
Yeah, it's really hard to find information on at this point, because even if you Google it at this point, it only shows articles up to like September 3rd. And then there's been no word on it since it's been mentioned, really.
Is it possible they got out, but there just haven't been articles written because there's less of a story once they're just back in the U.S.?
That's possible. I don't know. I just thought it would be newsworthy.
You would think. I mean, listen, like I've said before, we've got to support everybody who wants to get out. Joe Biden said there's no time limit. If you don't want to get out now and then in a month you do, he says the U.S. will help and do everything that the government can. So let's hope they stick to it.
Yeah, let's hope. All right. Good talking to you, David.
My pleasure. Thanks for the call. There's Josie from Michigan. A lot of good questions today. Let's try a different country just for kicks. How about Fiona from Germany? Fiona, you're on the air.
Hello. I, well, thought about the Afghanistan topic again, and we have data on how much civilian support staff has been working with the military, but the data has been collected by civilian organizations and only made available to government or listened to by the government as recently as like the 10th of September. And I would like to know the American situation. Do you think that would be listened to if a civilian organization would like mention civilian support staff that may or may not be interested in leaving Afghanistan? And if so, would there be assistance rendered?
I apologize. I'm not sure I understand the question. You're saying American civilian support staff currently in Afghanistan. Is that who we're talking about?
No, civilian Afghan support staff that happen to support European troops is also being evacuated small situation in Shia.
Are you listening to some video in the background? I just heard someone say, hi, how are you?
No.
Oh, that was weird. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they would qualify for asylum or refugee status. I'm just not sure. It's very hard for me to answer that question. I just don't know.
Yeah, it's a convoluted thing.
Yeah,
it just popped in my mind. But thank you for calling on me.
Oh, no problem. How are things in Germany? Are okay?
They have been very good.
Good.
Yeah.
Excellent. I spent 24 hours there last month and it was fantastic.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah,
have
I hope to be back.
Have you seen any of the political campaigning?
In Germany? No, I have not. No, I have not.
It was very startling to me when it appeared and it was so tiny and small. Hmm. You didn't see that other countries.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. All right. Thank you so much for the call.
Goodbye.
Okay, very good. Let's hear from a couple of other people. Why don't we go to... Nathan from California. Nathan, you're on the air.
Hey, David. I work in the wedding industry, and recently a local politician has gotten some flack on the news for attending a private event. And I was just wanting to know what your thoughts on kind of like the hypocrisy of politicians saying that you should wear a mask indoors while they're attending these private events.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's obvious hypocrisy. There's no question about it. Also, sometimes public health guidelines are supported at a governmental level and individuals assess their own risk and they do different things. I mean, okay, you know, it doesn't make it not hypocritical. It just is something that happens. I don't know about the event. You know, sometimes people go to I've gone to a couple of events where everybody's got to be vaccinated and gets a test on the way in. And then like I went to a dinner with 10 people like that last month and that seemed quite reasonable. And we don't know what the testing requirement is. I'm about to go to a wedding where everybody's going to be tested. So I don't know. I mean, of course, there's some level of hypocrisy. And then at the same time, I think a lot of the stuff is in the details.
Okay. I mean, do you think like at a certain point, like personal responsibility will be kind of like the thing that people will have to like take upon themselves outside of like these mask mandates and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to go more and more in that direction. And like Dr. Isaac Bogosh last week told us, once we really have a high enough level of vaccination and hopefully the virus becomes less serious, where the death risk goes down even more, then it becomes more about each individual making the decision for themselves. We're not at that point right now for a number of different reasons. The virus is still far more serious than the flu, and not nearly enough people are vaccinated. So yes, it's going to go more and more towards just personal decisions, but we're nowhere near that yet.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Very good question. Appreciate it. All right. Thanks everybody who called in. That's going to do it for today. We'll take calls again and I'll speak to more people. We'll take a quick break and be right back. All right, let's get into this week's mailbag. I got a weird email from someone last week saying I should call this my Apple bag, which is just strange. I think it relates to that weird Nicki Minaj story, and I talked about Apple bags, but I don't think Apple bags is an appropriate name for this segment. This is the mailbag. You can participate, maybe, if your email is interesting and smart enough or crazy enough, right? There's two types. By emailing info@davidpakman.com. This has been an increasingly popular segment. Emails are just dumping in, people wanting their questions answered. Let's just get right into it, folks, please. Starting with Brian. Brian wrote, I don't even care that Brian spelled my name wrong. He says, Mr. Pakman, I enjoy your show. I have heard you comment a few times about Donald Trump misstating the 1918 Spanish flu by repeating 1917 Spanish flu. He is not getting this wrong on accident. 17 is a QAnon reference, or Kanon, as some say, or shout out. Every time he uses 17 incorrectly, it is done purposefully. Thank you for what you do. Yeah, we had a caller last week on live calls who said the same thing, which is Q is the 17th letter of the alphabet, right? So M is 13, N 14, O 15, P 16, Q 17. That part checks out. Maybe that's true. I've now heard this from a few people. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. And if that's the case, it would be really disturbing about what it says about former President Trump, that he is sort of surreptitiously signaling to the QAnon conspiracy theorists. I would put nothing past Trump whatsoever. Part of me wonders whether he's clever or smart enough to even do that. Maybe somebody gave him the idea. I think the most likely explanation is also the simplest one. Trump misstated the 1918 flu as the 1917 flu once. Nobody corrected him, or they did, but Trump is too much of a narcissist to change it because it would concede that he said something wrong. So he's just continuing to call it the 1917 flu. That's my sort of guess. Next email is from Wayno. Wayno says, sir, how does YouTube's ban on misinformation affect Joe Rogan? It's a good question. I think you're referring to YouTube banning all anti-vax stuff. It's pretty clear to me that Joe Rogan is staying on this side of the YouTube rules. Some of his guests, maybe on their own channels, are going past that line. But my instinct in looking at the updated rules, and remember that the updated rules from YouTube about they've banned anti-vaxxers and anti-vax content, it was already in place for COVID vaccine stuff. They've just expanded it to be all anti-vax stuff. And so since the controversial subject matter on Rogan's channel has been about, when it comes to vaccines, the COVID vaccine, that ban was already in place. So I don't actually think that the new rules will really affect Rogan. A lot of people may not know this, but there's much more content demonetized on YouTube than there is removed. There's actually, I mean, of course, like straight up gore and violence and out and out conspiracy anti-vax stuff, it's removed. The vast majority of content is just demonetized when it violates terms and conditions. So my belief is Joe Rogan is not going to be affected by this in any way. Next email today is from Daniel. Daniel says, evidence the Pentagon has gave way more money to the Wuhan lab than Dr. Fauci's NIH. And the fact that Peter Daszak is the main one who gave all that money to the Wuhan scientists directly, and how one seems to care. I think what Daniel is trying to say is that despite what he believes to be evidence about money going from the NIH to the Wuhan lab, that no one seems to care. I believe that that's what this email is about. Listen, I've weighed in on this before. My view is I want to know the truth about the world, period. I am not, this is not a show where either for posturing or for narrative crafting or for any reason, I exclude things from the show that I believe are important or lie to the audience in any way. I always give my opinion. I want to know the truth about the Wuhan lab and funding and Dr. Fauci and the entire thing. I think what's important is that we understand, first of all, how much of this entire Dr. Fauci controversy fundamentally comes down to semantics, which I talked about last week on the Friday show with a caller who called in. That's number one. And number two, there is a lot of misinformation about this issue. So I continue to look when things come across my desk or my screen, as it might better be said, into the NIH Wuhan issue. And if I have some kind of major thing to come to you with and say, sirs and ma'ams, here's some news, you can rest assured that I will do that. Let's go to the next email. This is very weaponized. Now, I should actually even take it off the screen for a second. If there are kids in the room, get them out. If you have dogs that are particularly sensitive to cringe, get them out. Cats, they don't give a damn what the hell is on the screen. But in all seriousness, this is very, very weaponized. William wrote to me and said, they all died. David, I am the only member of my family and friend group who was smart enough to not listen to celebrity propaganda. And unfortunately, I was right. Almost everyone I know personally has died from a vaccine. My mother and I are the only ones left. She took the vaccine, but thankfully her immune system kicked it out. That's actually, it's so crazy. It's funny. What am I supposed to do now that everybody I know and love is dead because of your stupid vaccine? Does this even deserve a reply? Like, this is either someone, I mean, like, what is this, right? Okay, so it could be just someone who's trolling. Fine. Let's imagine it's not. This could be someone whose family really has tragically died from different issues, could be even COVID, and they are wrongly blaming it on being vaccinated. Also, they say from a vaccine, not necessarily even COVID. So it could be someone who is misattributing death to vaccines. Could be someone who's completely delusional and disconnected from the real world. I don't know. Could be a serial murderer who's killed people and is saying it was vaccine. This could be anything other than what it purports to be. I think that that's sort of where I would leave it. But these folks are out there. Anthony wrote to me and said, misleading characterization. Mr. Pacman, it is often stated in the media that most Republicans believe Trump won the 2020 election. Wouldn't it be more accurate to say that most Republicans claim they believe Trump won the election? Big difference. No, this is a beautiful question. We talked about this before. And we talked about this in a segment where I talked about the kind of magical thinking and we're at war mentality of many of these Trump supporters, where we wondered, when they say we believe Trump won, do they really believe it? Or is it the way they are choosing to answer polls in order to be part of the right team and in order to perpetuate some more general idea that they don't like Joe Biden? They don't like that Joe Biden won. And I think that I know I've been citing this a lot lately, but Neil Postman in Technopoly has a very good couple pages about exactly this issue about opinion polling, which is opinion polling. Opinion polling becomes an invisible technology in the sense that we just look at the results of the poll and we don't think about why was it done, who did it, what does it really mean to answer questions in one way or the other, and how were the questions asked. And what a poll tells us is an opinion poll tells us what people claim to believe. And people might claim to believe something they don't believe for different reasons. We talked, you know, there was this idea that the polls leading into 2020 that said Joe Biden was winning were wrong because the wrong people were being polled, right? Sampling problem. Or there were people bashful Trump supporters not willing to say that they supported Trump, but they really did. It ended up basically being false. I mean, Wisconsin was off. There's no doubt about it. But it basically was not true. But when it comes to what people believe about the 2020 election, it's important to say that the polls tell us what people claim to believe, and they may not actually believe the things they claim to believe for a whole bunch of different reasons. Very good point. Next email is from Larry. Larry says, keep drinking. Now it gets crazy. Now, by the way, keep drinking the Kool-Aid. Biden is the worst president in my lifetime. A liar, a wife stealer. And he has been selling out our country for his family's benefit for decades. It sounds like Larry's describing Trump, quite frankly. Larry goes on to say, Trader Joe's, where everything is for sale. Here we go with this stuff. Big Pharma must also love you. They are also a criminal organization and have you convinced hook, line, and sinker that they are our savior. Open your eyes, young man. So the first part is just whacked. I mean, like hard whacked. The last part, you know, a bunch of people have written in and they've said, David, clearly you're being paid to promote vaccines. And I tweeted about this earlier in the week. Why would anyone pay me to promote? Like, first of all, promote. I report on the science of vaccines. Why would anyone pay me to promote vaccines? We're small potatoes, right? Like in the grand scheme of things, it would be sort of a dumb thing to do. And in addition, why would they pay me given that I've reported on the science of vaccines for a long time? Like they don't. What else can I really say about vaccines other than reporting when they work and what the impact of those vaccinations is? And this is part of the sort of superstructure around vaccination disinformation that's out there, which is that some of the people, there's lies being told. It's all lies is the point. There's lies being told about how safe the vaccine is. That's the people who email in and they say thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people died from the vaccine. That's one part. But then also the people telling you what they claim is the science of vaccines, those people have been paid. So they simply can't be believed. It looks like they're giving you science, but they're giving you stuff they've been given by someone that paid them. And the whole point of it is not to just accept reality and live in this other world, which is preferable to them. It's a preferable world to them. It's simpler. And that's the appeal of some conspiracy theories. A lot of people find it hard to accept that bad things happen, unpredictable things happen. Every 100 years or so, we get a 100-year pandemic. But we've got a vaccine that helps. That sounds out of control to a lot of people. It's more appealing to believe this was all just done by humans. That's where you get the vaccine. The virus was created in a bioweapons lab and released because that's control. It's not a random event. It's not a probabilistic event anymore. And the vaccine is also part of the exact same plot. It's all a plot. For some people, even though they claim to be outraged by it, they would rather live in a world where everything is controlled by man rather than things that can happen that are left to chance, unpredictable, bad things. That's at the root of much conspiracism. Okay, last one today. Here's a bonus. This one came in via Facebook on Monday morning. This is from George. This is really wild. George says, you keep calling Trump supporters delusional. I truly hope that you open your eyes before the communist, Democrat, Nazi party come for you. A few contradictions there. Trump did not lose the 2020 election. It was part of a colors revolution. Colors revolution. Educate yourself, educate your followers, and open your eyes. Otherwise, you might find yourself on that train, just like the Jews found themselves on a Nazi train. Except this time it won't be gas. It'll be an injection. They call it a vaccine, dumbass. Folks, this is what we're up against. We're going to have to try to solve the problems of humanity despite people like this. I don't see any way to get them to help us. Maybe we can prevent them from hurting us. Maybe. But it is not looking very good. Not looking very good. Get your emails in for next week's mailbag, info@davidpakman.com. We have a fantastic bonus show today. It's all me today on the bonus show. I know many people expecting only producer Pat today. It's all me. I will see you on the bonus show.
Hovland. You're listening to 88.3 WRCT FM, Pittsburgh.
This is Grant Lee Phillips telling you, if you're wondering where you're tuned to, it happens to be 88.3 FM, radio's finest. WRCT, Pittsburgh.
WRCT, Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulchritude.
This is Ziggy Marley, and you're listening to WRCT in Pittsburgh, you know, go Steelers.
Hey, this is Jim from Rusted Root, and you're listening to WRCT 88.3 in Pittsburgh. Yow.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all RDJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
RCT in sound from way out.
Hello, this is Adam Clayton here, the bass player from U2. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
RCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
Deposed from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh, yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT.
This is Satan. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Automation is the key. I am Dr. Jazz, PhD.
Hey, this is Ben Foles, and you're listening to WRCT. It's 2 for Tuesday, 3 for Thursday, Ladies Night Wet T-Shirt Contest on 88.3 FM, biatch.
Thank you. DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
We at WRCT Pittsburgh do not condone the illegal duplication of copyrighted material. But if you happen to own all the tracks we played and would like a copy of them, just FTP to FTP.
Due to a request by Computing Services, the remainder of this announcement cannot be aired.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
This year, the Red Nation is preparing for its 6th annual Indigenous Peoples Day march and rally here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It is a victory won by Native people here that is a culmination of years of continuous resistance to colonialism on Tiwa territory. We want to remind people, specifically Native people, that this is our victory. It is a people's victory. Despite the fact that Biden has recently signed this proclamation, let it be known that this day to remember our struggles cannot be co-opted by anyone.
President Biden's issued the first ever presidential proclamation of Indigenous Peoples Day, following a growing movement to debunk the myth of Christopher Columbus as beneficent discoverer. We'll go to New Mexico to speak with Jennifer Marley, a member of the Red Nation, and we'll talk to historian Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, author of An Indigenous People's History of the United States, and her new book, Not a Nation of Immigrants, Settler Colonialism, White Supremacy, and a History of Erasure and Elimination. Then this week, thousands of indigenous leaders and climate justice activists are calling on Biden to declare a climate emergency as the Enbridge Line 3 oil pipeline in Minnesota reportedly becomes operational, which could double Minnesota's greenhouse gas emissions. We'll speak with Winona LaDuke, longtime indigenous activist who's been organizing for years to block the pipeline.
This is a plea to President Joe Biden. This is a plea to Governor Tim Walz. This is a plea to Senators Tina Smith and Amy Klobuchar to be leaders, to do the right thing for the people of Minnesota, for the waters of our Great Lake Superior, for future generations and for the Anishinaabe.
Finally, we look at one of the two journalists awarded the Nobel Peace Prize Friday, Dmitry Muratov, editor-in-chief of the Russian newspaper Novaya Gazeta, which has lost more journalists to murder than any other Russian news outlet.
This award is for Anna Politskovskaya, Yuri Shekochkin, Igor Donnikov, Anastasia Baburova, Stas Merkelov, Natasha Estimarova, our fallen professionals who gave their lives for the profession. I am not the right beneficiary for this prize.
We'll speak with Katrina Vandenhoevel, publisher of The Nation magazine, who's been reporting on Russia for the last 30 years. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The pharmaceutical company Merck has asked drug regulators in the United States and Europe to authorize the first antiviral pill to treat COVID-19 patients at home. Public health officials hope approval of the drug, molnupiravir, could help reduce the strain on hospitals. In other pandemic news, the official COVID death toll in Brazil's topped 600,000, the second highest official total in the world, behind the United States, where over 713,000 people have died. More than 130 countries, including every G20 nation, have agreed to a global deal to ensure large corporations pay a global minimum tax rate of 15%. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, described the agreement as a, quote, landmark deal. French Economy Minister Bruno Le Maire spoke on Friday.
The deal opens the path to a true fiscal revolution for the 21st century. It's a fiscal revolution, first, because there is no going back. It's a fiscal revolution because it brings more justice in the matter of taxation. Finally, digital giants will pay their fair share of taxes in countries, including France, where they are making a profit.
Critics of the global tax deal say a 15% tax rate's too low. Susana Ruiz of Oxfam said, quote, this deal is a shameful and dangerous capitulation to the low tax model of nations like Ireland. It's a mockery of fairness that robs pandemic-ravaged developing countries of badly needed revenue for hospitals and teachers and better jobs, she said. In Afghanistan, a suicide attack killed dozens of worshippers at a